How do we get from the host nation's head coach to the other English manager at the 2022 World Cup?
Hello and welcome back to Wikipedia Wanderers, another World Cup special. It's episode number 3 for this one. And Josh, I'm going to start off because we've been having a little old sing-song before the episode. Favourite World Cup song which can't be English based?
Am I allowed to have... No?
Yeah, that's just... Isn't that Brazil?
That was Ant and Dec were on the ball.
Oh, you can have Ant and Dec on the ball because that's terrible. Yeah, yeah. You can have that.
You don't like it?
No, we're on the ball. No, it's terrible.
It's such a good song. I've only got three I like.
Three lions.
Yeah. Vindaloo. We're on the ball. That's my go-to trifecta.
I mean, we were literally just singing Waka Waka.
Yeah, but I don't really listen to it. I probably need to branch out a little bit. Have you got? You're multicultural anyway, Dave. What else is in your locker?
I mean, JKLV Elvis, a little less conversation from the Nike advert got ported into FIFA.
Oh, for a World Cup. Okay. If we can include that, that's a big fan of.
That's a banger. Yeah. Waka Waka is obviously huge. Wave My Flag by Kanan. I was a big fan of that for the South Africa World Cup.
What?
You've heard it. You would know what it is, definitely. Right, okay. South Africa World Cup. I should have put it in the intro for last week's episode. So, or when we covered the South Africa World Cup. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I was just interested to know what you're...
Have you heard this World Cup song?
No. You were saying it could be Nicki Minaj. We don't really know. So,
big fan of Nicki Minaj.
Yeah.
Putting it out there.
Yeah. in musical tastes or?
Nah, that's not like
a
music.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
She does music. I didn't know. Can't tell that from still images.
Fair enough. Right, before we go into strange territory of Josh's likes and dislikes, take us away. Where are we starting? Where are we going from? What's the deal? What are we talking about?
This is about current managers in the World Cup, which I don't feel ever get enough focus. Leading up to it, it's all talk of the players who are going to be there, but there's so many different managers, 32 managers, obviously. Has anyone ever got sacked during a World Cup? That'd be amazing.
that would be very interesting, wouldn't it, if you got sacked during a World Cup? I think it's interesting.
Well, there was Spain, wasn't there? There was Lopetegui, wasn't there?
Just before, wasn't it? Just before it started.
Just before, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Because he announced he had accepted the Madrid job?
Yeah. Was it Madrid? I mean, it was like, no.
Yeah.
Then he didn't get that either.
Yeah, he didn't get it either. But
what a week. Now at Wolves.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right. Managers don't really get much of the chat before. I think Southgate's getting quite a lot. Let's just keep it in England at the moment. Southgate's getting quite a lot because, you know, he's done very well competition-wise, if he's got to, but there's a lot of chat around the negativity of the tactics, and I think that always comes with managers. So
yeah, but I mean, in this case, we've got lots of like former players are knocking about now. We've got Otto Addo at Ghana, I think it is.
Yeah.
He's played for Dortmund. We've got Alou Cisse at Senegal. He's played for Birmingham. Rigobert Song, friend of the pod, at Cameroon.
Yeah.
But you're starting somewhere different. You're starting with the host nation today.
I am. I thought, doing a manager special, I don't know too much about this guy. And reading into his very small Wikipedia page, because he's not done too much.
He is, yeah. Tiny.
It was actually the TRS, top right summary. I always get it the wrong way around. Top right summary that interested me, because as soon as I opened his page and I saw Barcelona, Aspire, Qatar under-19s, under-23s, Qatar full-time senior manager, I was intrigued, because I've recently watched TIFO Football. I'm sure people listening to this podcast will be aware of TIFO Football on YouTube and their articles and stuff they do with The Athletic. They've put out a recent, or pre-World Cup starting, a series of videos about how Qatar got the World Cup and all of the political things and all of the global politics as well that came into it and everything that happened. So just focusing on Felix Sanchez at the moment, my recommendation is go and watch those TIFO videos as well. They're very good. But focusing on Felix Sanchez. So yeah, started born in Barcelona and was Barcelona youth manager for 10 years between 1996 to 2006. Not there's nothing written on his page about his time at FC Barcelona as a youth coach. He wasn't even the manager, sorry. He was a youth coach. But he moved to Qatar in 2006 and joined something called the Aspire Academy, which is where it all gets very interesting. But in 2013, he was actually promoted from a coach there to be the under-19s manager, and made his way up to the under-23s and then has now become senior, the senior team's manager. So there's a lot of detail on this page that's missing from what I've learned in TIFO videos, okay? So the Aspire Academy is this thing that was set up because Qatar wanted to build a good footballing nation. They wanted to be the football powerhouse before they even got the World Cup. They wanted to be the football powerhouse in the Arabic area, around that area, like the Middle East. They wanted to be the football powerhouse. So what they did is they started nationalizing Brazilians that weren't playing for Brazil. They started nationalizing all the things, and FIFA basically went, what the hell are you doing? Like, you can't change your nationalization rules to be in the country for a year to say that you can then play for the national team. So when that happened, they basically built this thing called the Aspire Academy and used it as a hub in Qatar, and then set up other Aspire Academies around different places in the globe, which were poorer, let's say, less well off in footballing terms and in money terms. So they went to the places like Senegal, they went to Bolivia, I think it is, and places like that, and set up these academies. And then FIFA again cracked down and said, yeah, that's fine, but what you're not allowed to do is put them into those academies, move them to the Aspire Academy in Qatar, and then nationalise them, because that's against child labour laws for anyone that's under 17 or whatever it is. So they went, okay, that's fine. But what they've done since they've set that up is they now have a team, a Qatari team, of mainly people that have come through this Aspire Academy and have grown in Qatar and been there for since birth or since very young age, and have grown up. And this Aspire Academy set all of that up, and it was part of their bid for the World Cup to say, this is what we've done for world football. We've put these academies around, got poorer people in. They've got lots of players that have generated in their academies playing for African teams at the World Cup as well at the moment. So they have done some good things for global football in terms of putting things in there. Obviously, a lot of it comes under building them into their reputation, right? But what happened is that when, coming back to Felix Sanchez, when Felix Sanchez was manager of the under-19s, the head coach of the Qatari national team said, basically, if Qatar are going to listen to FIFA and say we're not allowed to nationalise players, then I'm not going to do the job anymore. Because he was basically saying Qatarians aren't going to be good enough at football to ever do what the Qatari government or FA want to happen. So when he said that, there was this little period, which is that 3 years between 2017 to 2020, maybe 2019, where this guy, Felix Sanchez, took over the under-23s to start building them into a pattern of play, knowing that he would take over when this guy left in 2020 or whenever it was. So that's why on his page there's a crossover that says Qatar under-23s and Qatar 2017 starting at the same time. So he basically built this under-23 Qatar team to come to the World Cup. And that's what we're going to see. So it should be, and this is where it gets interesting, a very well-drilled, know-what-they're-doing international team. They've had the same coach for 5 years. Like, he'll be drilling them in. He's been working with them at under-19s and the young academy. And it's really changed my outlook on how good, not how good Qatar might be, but how much of a battle and fight they might put up. Because I think that I originally thought they're going to get annihilated. They're going to be completely walked over. But yeah, it might be slightly different. So that's what interested me about this guy, to read a little bit more about it. He has actually won the Asia Cup as well with Qatar in 2019, which is their first title as a country, which is good. As soon as they scored 19 and conceded once, and that was in the final to Japan, who are obviously a powerhouse team compared to them. So yeah, he's been doing all right. They were selected to host the World Cup, obviously, in 2022, when they got the bid. I didn't know this happened, but when they got the bid accepted, or won, I guess, to win the World Cup, a few weeks later, they were invited to go and play in the Copa America in Brazil. So the Qatari team travelled to the Copa America, played in that in 2019, knocked out in the group stage, but they all said it was a learning curve in preparation for the World Cup and playing different sort of nation teams and things like that in a competition. December 2019, got to the semi-finals of the Arabian Gulf Cup as well. He led them there. They were then invited to CONCACAF Gold Cup in the United States in 2021. They got to the semi-finals of the CONCACAF. So, I mean, there is a little bit of a like reputation being built and things like that.
We're speaking at this point. We're recording at this point in time before this is hours before the first match kicks off.
Yeah.
So the intriguing thing is that people will be listening to this retrospectively and will be like, oh, who knows? But I've heard that they're a high-pressing, high-intensity team. And I also saw a graphic around the minutes that teams have played, league minutes have played from the start of the season until squads announced.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which is the top, one of the European nations is the top, and squad in total has played something around 28,000 minutes. I think English players were kind of fourth or fifth, around mid-20s. Qatar are by far away the bottom. They've played like 2,000 minutes totally. So,
wow.
Are they coming into this fresh-legged? Other nations coming into it well-drilled in terms of fitness. So I'm intrigued because I think everybody's written off Qatar because it's not a nation everyone's au fait with internationally. But yeah, I'm unwilling to get off the fence here because it's going to be one way or the other. It's going to because people we would have played how many games since people listened to this. So.
Yeah.
But I'm interested.
Exactly. I'm very interested, and that interested me in the manager and the TIFO videos and the scandal stuff. I thought shining the light a little bit on the Qatar away from all that geopolitical stuff and focusing on the manager and the football he's playing and how long he's been their manager, I thought it was a nice thing to do. So that's where we're starting, is Felix Sanchez. There's not too many ways out. Obviously, we have to touch on a World Cup again, whether it be a match, a competition or something like that. That's the rules we've put in place. So yeah, that's where we're starting. Josh, where are we getting to?
So it's true to form. I was looking through the managers, had their nations right next to them, and scrolling down I saw an English manager that wasn't Gareth Southgate. I was like, I'm picking you.
Yes, this
you sir
is brand new information.
Yeah. So I've chosen John Herdman, the Canada national team manager. So we've actually chosen two managers here. I think 46 is the youngest. John Herdman is 47. Felix Sanchez is 46. But what did you tell me about Felix Sanchez's playing career? Nothing.
He didn't have one, yeah.
No. John Herdman's literally just got one section in the top right summary. Hibiscus Coast. There's no appearances, no goals. Because I don't think either of these managers were players of note. So John Herdman, born in County Durham, was at Northumbria University, was a development coach at Sunderland's Youth Academy until 2001 when he moved over to New Zealand. He arrived in New Zealand, joined the National Association Football Programme, and initially was the coach education manager and later the director of football development, and in 2006 was appointed the women's national team coach of New Zealand. He led them to under 20 squad to the World Championships. He guided the senior squad to the World Cups in 2007, 2011, and the 2008 Olympics. And it was in that time he played amateur football with Hibiscus Coast, so not even professional football. He seemingly has a love for English-speaking nations outside of England because he's gone from here to New Zealand and goes to Canada and the Canadian women's team again and guided them through the CONCACAF Olympic qualifying tournament. He got spot the London Olympic Games. They took a bronze medal and they did the same at the Rio Games. And then he becomes, in 2018, becomes the men's coach. So he's had three jobs in his career: New Zealand women's, Canada women's, now Canada men's. So he's been, again, similar to Felix Sanchez, been there a while now. It's his fourth year as Canada men's national team. And he also became men's national director with responsibility for all age groups from under 14s upwards. Not bad for a 47-year-old
who's
had two previous jobs. You know, I think most coaches would love that kind of level of autonomy. He's guided Canada up the FIFA World Rankings to its highest ever position to date. They've been awarded Most Improved Side of the Year in 2001. They're now kind of 33rd in the FIFA World Rankings. He's guided them obviously to their first World Cup in 36 years, and he's the first manager to successfully lead both the national women's and men's teams to qualify for a World Cup.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, just a little bit on his personal life. But he's from County Durham in England, and married to his childhood sweetheart Claire, and has two children. But, you know, as Canada coach, 68% win percentage, somewhat got a bit of a golden generation on his hands here.
I was thinking
Davies that. And David, and, you know, still got the legendary Atiba Hutchinson, the oldest outfield player at this year's World Cup, who we've obviously covered.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, he intrigued me again, because, like, English managers who've just gone abroad and different routes to management, it always kind of, like, intrigues me, going, could I be a manager? Like, what? Because you can get into it through many different routes, can't you? Because you just have a lot of success at a club where they've given you access to be a manager or a coach, which is, you're not getting somewhere else, but you achieve stuff there. And because of the league systems, you can just keep improving, and then someone else takes a chance on you, and it snowballs, and suddenly you're Canada men's national team manager.
I was going to say, I wonder if it was a sort of circumstances thing, because Felix Sanchez was poached from the FC Barcelona youth coaching system to go and coach at Aspire by Qatar, right, where they were just... We've set up this thing that spend the money, go and get the best coaches recommended.
That feels like, you know, Barcelona have had good youth academies, and probably got the Ajax Barcelona crossover. Great, we're going to get you.
Yeah. John Herdman, it doesn't say why he moved to Canada, right? Or New Zealand, sorry, originally. Was it his wife?
Neither. It just doesn't. It just says he moved to New Zealand. It was as an external link to check, but no.
I'm like, I wonder if it was just pure circumstantial that he moved there, had some coaching qualifications, got a job, and then moved up. And yeah, really interesting. It's really, really interesting. So what are we thinking in for John Herdman? Basically Canada, right?
It's got to be the Canada. It's either the 2022 World Cup qualifying, Canada national team, not Atiba Hutchinson because we've been there, and not Canada, I think it was a national team player of the year or something like that. Canada soccer player of the year we've been to. So they're kind of closed off. Jonathan David we've also been to, who's a start of one episode.
Very true.
So ways out of Felix Sanchez, the Spanish manager of Qatar.
I mean...
You want to go to Aspire Academy, don't you?
No, I don't, actually, because read around that anyway after the TIFO football thing, so I would encourage people to read around it. But I'm quite tempted by the AFC Asia Cup in 2019.
There is a clink to the actual final as well.
I'm happy to go for that, I think. I think I would love to go as niche as the under-19 championship final, but I just think that would be I'd be too much. So,
well, I don't know. What point under-19s...
You can click on 2014, right?
9 years ago, 8 years ago, they're now 27.
Yeah, true.
But they might also have been no players to ever play senior football.
Yeah,
as is the luck of a draw with youth football.
Yeah, let's go to the Asia Cup final of 2019, which they won, which Qatar won.
Okay. So the 2019 AFC Asia Cup final, Qatar 3, Japan 1, played in Abu Dhabi. Man of the match was Akram Afif. Attended 36,700 people attended that day, and it was held. When what date was this? 1st of February 2019. Okay, so we have route to a final. So Japan at the group stage, Turkmenistan, Oman, and Uzbekistan. And then in knockouts, we played Saudi Arabia, Vietnam, and Iran. Qatar, Lebanon, North Korea, Saudi Arabia. Then went on to play Iraq, South Korea, and UAE.
I mean, yeah, beating South Korea and Japan on the way to the Asia Cup final is pretty good.
Tommy Yasu's playing, Maya Yoshida, Nagatomo, Minamino, Asako's playing, you know, Muto. So it's not like it's second string Japanese side here.
No, the Asia Cup is a big thing in Asia, I can tell you that. Like, Singapore get well excited for it and they never qualify. Like, it's a big thing in Asia. And it would have been huge. I mean, I was looking down the Qatari team there. Saad Al-Sheib, don't recognise in goal. I'll just go through the team in a 3-4-3 formation. Saad Al-Sheib, Bassam Al-Rawi, Balum Kachuki, Tarek Salaman, Roro, which is very excited to click on that, Asim Madibo, Abduliz Hatem, Abdulkrim Hassan Al-Haidos, Almoz Ali, Akram Afif, Salim Al-Hajari, Karim Badiaf, and Ahmed Ali-Ladin. I'm going to say I nailed all of those, but probably didn't. I don't really recognise any of those names.
No, and it's wondering, you know, at this point in time, when we, you know, in a few weeks, will any of these become, you know, will one of these players have scored the opening goal and we'll forever remember him, like Tshabalala?
Yeah, true.
Okay, so we've got lots of, the venue has got, you know, previous things it's held. So the Zayed Sports Stadium in Abu Dhabi held the 1996 Asia Cup final, 2003 World Youth Championships, the FIFA World Club, FIFA World, it's one of several FIFA Club World Cup finals in 2018, most recently. All lots of, you know, lots of different Japanese players mentioned. We have the 2018 World Cup mentioned.
Yeah. But
with this being Qatar's first World Cup and Canada's first World Cup in 36 years, we're somewhat hamstrung.
Yeah, we are a bit.
So we need to go, was it 86, does that make it? Yeah, 86 World Cup in Mexico.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe a route to Mexico is, you know, is a left field one to get somewhere. Any of these Japanese players you remember playing in Mexico?
What's Yoshida doing nowadays?
Was at Southampton. He's like got a lot of goals for Japan.
He has, yeah. Isn't he in Serie A, Yoshida?
It might be like Fiorentina or Sampdoria or something like that.
Something, maybe, I think something like that, isn't it?
I think Sampdoria, maybe, because I think I remember seeing him in a line like with when Harry Winks went there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really interested in seeing what Roro's done with his career, because it's a fantastic name. Or I am interested in seeing where Saad Al-Shiba plays, because he kept six consecutive clean sheets in this tournament. Conceding one goal only in the final. That's...
I'm pretty sure I remember seeing a graphic of where people play, and the clubs with most players at the World Cup this year, and one of them was a Qatari club, I think, was as a Qatari club which has like 15 to 20 of these players playing for them.
Okay, so odds would suggest he's just in Qatar. So
yeah, I'm not sure if there's any of the Qatar players playing abroad, actually.
No,
so I don't
okay.
think a Qatar player is our best route.
Did you want to go? Do you want to go a Japanese player? Should we learn about someone we don't know? The centre forward, the starting centre forward, Yoya Osako.
Yeah?
Yoya Osako. I don't know how you pronounce it, but starting up front could be a good option to learn.
Yeah, they can go there.
Or the manager, figure out where he's been doing. What did he do to get the Japanese job? It's a manager episode.
It's a manager episode. I think he is the current, I recognise the name from looking at the list. I think he's current Japanese manager as well.
Let's go and have a look at the manager then, yeah. Let's go and have a look at the manager.
Hajime Moriyasu, yeah, 54-year-old coach, former midfielder. Again, and for Sanfrecce Hiroshima, most of his career, 271 of his 348 appearances. Didn't have a great long career. You've seen a lot of Japanese players have really like a lot of high appearances for their nation. For 4 years, he appeared 35 times. So maybe not the greatest player of all time, but then went on to manage his beloved Hiroshima side. Then went on to, again, worked through the ranks. There's a lot of kind of working through ranks, yeah. Isn't it? Japan under-23s for 4 years. And overlap again.
I know.
In 2017-2021, he was Japan under-23 manager. But in 2018, he also, it seemed, took on the Japan national team manager. Whether that's kind of the Olympic realm, he just, it seemed the best fit to personal life. His son, Keigo Moriyasu, played as a striker for Edgeworth FC in Australia, in the National Premier League Northern Division. Another son, Shui, plays for Kamatare Sanuki in the J2 League. Okay. So there's some family pedigree.
Yeah. International career, I was just looking under Ooft. Japan progressed the 1994 World Cup qualification for the 1994 World Cup. Moriyasu was on the pitch when Japan's hope to play in the finals was dashed by an injury-time Iraqi equaliser in the last qualifier, the match that the Japanese fans now refer to as the Agony of Doha. I love that. Agony of Doha. I'd love it if we named more names in English football. Like, what have we had? The Battle of Bramall Lane?
Battle of the Bridge.
Battle of the Bridge.
Spurs and Chelsea. Yeah. I only like putting battle in front of stadiums with being in front of their name.
Yeah, that's teams. True. Right. What was so Euro 96 where, you know, Gazza stretched and just missed the ball to Germany? Would that be the agony of Wembley?
It needs alliteration with it. The woes of Wembley woes is probably a...
Yeah, the Wembley woes.
In April 1990, he had a trial at Manchester United.
Nice.
You would very much remember his name if he'd, got that.
Yeah.
So he would have only been only a few years into his... so he'd been 22 at the time of that trial. Was that Sir Alex at that point, or was that pre-Sir Alex, 1990?
Yeah, no, that was... Sir Alex was 1986 he was appointed. So, yeah, that was... that was there. Just a quick note, I think we've got an action. Because just after that sentence, Joss, it says the J-League started in 1993 and Mazda was transformed to Sanfrecce Hiroshima. For whom... Oh, no, sorry. The club was transformed. Yeah, no. I thought they meant him. He was transformed into
Hiroshima. No, if you look down his club statistics, we've got 5 years when they're called Mazda and then six subsequent seasons they're called Sanfrecce Hiroshima.
Yeah. Okay, what are we thinking of a way out here? I mean, 1994 World Cup and World Cup qualifying is a... It gets us onto a World Cup stage, but there's no, as we said, there's no Canada or Qatar.
No, but that does tick off any World Cup-related activities.
True, yeah, true.
It's a good way of getting a World Cup ticked off, I think.
So, we said we're allowed a World Cup-related game as well, right? So we could go to the Agony of Doha, which is a clickable link. And it's talking about the 1994 World Cup qualifier against Iraq.
Oh, 100% we're going to that one.
Okay. So in the final round of matches of the final round of Asian qualification for the 1994 FIFA World Cup, Japan and Iraq drew 2-2 in Doha, Qatar. If Japan had won the match, they would have qualified for the World Cup for the first time. Instead, Japan finished third in their group, allowing their arch rival South Korea to qualify instead. The Japanese refer to the match as the Agony of Doha, whereas the South Koreans, because the country's national football team only qualified in the final minutes of this match, refer to it as the Miracle of Doha. There you go.
Yeah, because it was the J-League had just been set up earlier that year and football was becoming popular in Japan and they'd never been close to qualifying for a World Cup, although they've obviously since qualified and even co-hosted.
Yeah.
Team members from this match are still known as the Class of Doha, and the phrase "Never forget Doha" remains a rallying cry for fans.
There you go.
Oh, I love this.
Oh, they've got the whole squads and everything as well. A bit further down.
Yeah.
Oh.
And this match in particular, it was a 91st minute equalising goal from Omran, who must have dashed their hopes after they went 1-0 up, 1-1, 69th minute 2-1, and then 91st minute.
He came on. He came on at half time, and they went 4-3-3 from a 4-4-2 when he came on. They knew they needed the goals, Josh. They were 1-0 down at the time, changed it up. It went 1-1, 2-1 Japan, 2-2. Oh, that would have been drama, absolute drama if you're a fan of that game. After missing the 1994 edition, Japan eventually qualified for the 1998 FIFA World Cup before hosting 2002 FIFA World Cup with their rivals South Korea. The South Koreans dramatically beat Portugal, Italy and Spain and ended in fourth place while Japan were eliminated in the round of 16. Both teams did lose to Turkey though. It was the first time for both teams to reach the knockout phase. What have you got for me, Josh? You've been scouring the page.
Well, I'm trying to think if there's any way, you know, anything, any name I recognise, anyone, because we were very much stuck in Iraq and Japan here, and I'm trying to think, you know, we've got Hans Uft, the manager.
Yeah,
just... I don't think it'd be unlikely to be linked to Canada or from would, here.
Would Paraguay play against Canada in any sort of qualification? They wouldn't, would they? Paraguay would be South America. No. Yeah, or Copper America. But Paraguay and Canada?
No, I don't think... Ooh, sometimes there's a rogue entry into it, isn't there?
Yeah. For Iraq, this failure is just one part of the much larger World Cup drought. In comparison to increasing successes of the Japanese side, Iraq has repeatedly missed the opportunity to qualify for every World Cup. Iraq has only qualified for the 1986 edition, and it's a clickable link.
Oh, nice.
That is under Aftermath, or Aftermath, however you want to say it.
1986 edition. Oh, and I do like, I mean, 1986 year of our birth.
Yeah.
And Mexico has the shadow on the pitch, doesn't it? That could look like one of the camera or something was above it, or one of the stadiums had the... Do you remember this in the Diego Maradona goal against England? There's a big shadow on the pitch because of something in the stadium. So, yes, I like it. Let's go, shall we?
Let's go. What can you remember about it? Who won it?
Wasn't this Argentina's win?
I think it was Argentina's win, yeah. Top goal scorer? Maradona?
Yeah, I'm guessing Maradona. Oh, Gary Lineker had a good tournament, didn't he? It was that, because that's the Maradona great goal against England.
Yeah.
And Hand of God.
Yeah. Is this the tournament where Gary Lineker shit in his pants? I think it is.
I mean, it's somewhat likely, being in Mexican food and hot heat. We have Mexican Wave came from Mexico 86, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. All right, let's dive into it then. And the first sentence I read is, the tournament saw the appearance of the Mexican Wave, a spectator phenomenon which was popularised worldwide after featuring during the tournament. Well done, Josh. You win. You win the quiz, just for that.
Oh, Gary Lineker was top scorer.
Nice.
Best player of Maradona. Champions were Argentina.
How do we know more about this than we did South Africa?
Not entirely sure.
Yeah. Like, a little reference to the past episode there. Go and check it out. But I can see Canada are listed in the intro as well. Canada, Denmark and Iraq made their first appearances at the World Cup final stage. So
Denmark did. Okay, that's funny because you'd go Canada, not really a footballing nation. Iraq, not really a football nation. But Denmark are now synonymous with football and they produce excellent players. And that's interesting. Goal of a century was Maradona's first goal against England. And then also the Hand of God. I love the 80s, right? The logo and the writing is just beautiful.
It is.
I feel like getting it as a poster in my room.
It would be quite cool. It would be quite cool to have a poster like that. Good times. I say good times. Okay. We were just born. But were we born yet? No, yes.
Yeah, we would have been. It would be in summer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we'd have been a couple of months old.
Yeah, remember it well.
The official mascot of the 1986 World Cup was Pique, a jalapeno pepper. Love that.
I don't really get the mascots. And the Olympics has these things as well, doesn't it? Like things that look weird. It's just I don't really get it.
He characteristic of Mexican cuisine. He came with a mustache and a sombrero. You couldn't do that now, could you?
No. Okay, so we have 3-2 in a final as well. What a match that must have been. 3-2 because it went 2-0 up for Argentina. Germany in the second half scored two goals in 6 minutes to make it 2-2. And then just 3 minutes later, Bruachaca makes it 3-2 and probably just kill West Germany's spirits at that point.
Trying to just see if there's anything. I mean, Northern Ireland qualified for this World Cup. Wow.
Didn't realise Maradona's two goals were 4 minutes apart.
No, I didn't know that. It was a game changer, wasn't it? Because weren't we 1-0 up?
No, we bring back one back.
Ah, okay.
We score in the 81st minute and his was 51-55. So I'm going to look at goal scorers now. Oh, just this may be a route where we go, actually. Eight players received a red card at the tournament. Ray Wilkins got one. Frank Arneson, sporting director, got one. Thomas Berthold, I feel like I don't recognise that name. But top of the list is a Canadian called Mike Sweeney.
Nice.
Like that might be where we go out of here.
Well, surely the way out of here is just click on Canada.
if you want to go direct, yeah.
Because Canada is why we're here, I had a quick look at their group that they were in. They finished bottom with 0 points, so that was good. Soviet Union topped it. Two wins from 3, 5 points. They beat France on goal difference. They had Soviet Union had +8 goal difference after three games. 4-9 against 1. France had +4 goal difference, 4-5 against 1. Hungary finished third in that group, and Canada finished bottom with a goal difference of -5. So results then, Canada lost to France 1-0.
Canada didn't score a single goal.
No, they didn't score a single goal, yeah. Hungary lost to the Soviet Union 6-0. France and the Soviet Union drew 1-1. Hungary then beat Canada 2-0. France then beat Hungary 3-0, and the Soviet Union beat Canada 2-0. So actually, out of all of that group, it was Hungary that had the worst result, a 6-0 mauling by the Soviet Union. So, yeah.
Norman Whiteside grabbed a goal, a name I recognise, for Northern Ireland. Gordon Strachan got a goal for Scotland. So we have England, Northern Ireland and Scotland at this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, we have three home nations at the 2022 one. Any other names? I always want to know something about Enzo Schifo. I don't know anything about him, but it's such a great name. of a Belgian player, best young player of this tournament. Jean Tigana got a goal for France.
I was just looking at the stadiums, because obviously it gives you a picture, doesn't it? And it, obviously the Azteca is the famous, big famous stadium in Mexico. But some of them look really nice, really good. I mean, one of them looks absolutely dreadful. But yeah, no, they look...
Which one are you saying looks dreadful?
I'm going top right, because if that's the only photo of a stand, it's not an amazing stand.
At it's 46,000-seater, though.
Pueblo City in Puebla. A stadio... Oh, that's the famous Mexican footballer, isn't it? Chuantumecoc. Stadium Chuantum... That stadium is named after a famous Mexican footballer.
Okay, go for it, Dave, but no one's going to know what that is because you just said some letters there. But, and Mexico will be hosting again with USA and Canada in 2030.
They will, yeah, they will. So, any mention of the ball that was used? Just touching on the previous episode.
Great shout, actually. With mascot host selection.
It'll be an Adidas something.
Do you know what? It's control effing ball on a football Wikipedia page doesn't really narrow it down.
No.
Mike Sweeney, sucker, and treasure trove of team names which are amazing. Okay. You've got to pick your favourite out of this. Edmonton Drillers. Including the Edmonton Drillers indoor side. Vancouver Whitecaps, Golden Bay Earthquakes, Cleveland Force, Minnesota Strikers, Baltimore Blast, Toronto Blizzard, Cleveland Crunch, Boston Bolts. Oh, yes, please.
I was leaning towards Cleveland Force, and then you came back with Cleveland Crunch, and I'm like, I think that's my one.
Indoor, I would love to watch some. They should make it available in a Netflix documentary series, the 80s indoor American football, American soccer.
That guy that played for Everton.
Yes, Preki.
Preki. I wonder if there was a crossover between Preki and... Old was it violent Sweeney.
Homer Wizards or something, wasn't it? Was it?
Yeah, the Wizards. Like yeah.
Okay, so what do we have here? Spent several years with youth club Squamish United. He went to Simon Fraser University as a walk on. That means he's like a
pickup, yeah.
Yeah.
A pickup player. I've got just something very quickly to bring to the attention of yourself and the listeners. The Mexico World Cup was held in which year?
1986.
Yep. And which team did he play for in 1986? An indoor football team. Not even a Canadian league team. It was indoor football from 1984 until 1989.
Why did they score zero goals, Dave?
Yeah, that's... okay, that's... Wow.
Yeah. I love it. He kind of it backs up going in his positions... Midfielder or defender. Is that he normally just tracks a player. Yeah. He's playing by the side.
I mean, he's been named in the all-time Canada Men's 11.
Oh, yeah, he could be an excellent player. He's just changing format is quite difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, he's Hall of Famer, yeah. So he actually, funnily enough, he made his senior debut against New Zealand. Which we've obviously already covered with Herdman's first job. He's represented Canada in 24 FIFA World Cup qualification matches and played two of their games. But the country's only appearance at World Cup finals to date. I've got a soft spot for Canada. I'd love to live there.
Have you been?
No, never even been.
Oh, it's amazing. I love Canada. Yeah.
Canada and New Zealand, I think, will be up there on where if I was to live anywhere else.
Yeah. So you literally want to be John Herdman?
I could be John Herdman, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, and friends with Mike Sweeney.
Yeah, why not?
Played in the 84 Olympics.
Scored his only goal against Haiti, that's not how you say that name. Haiti. in World Cup qualification for 1986, so he helped them get there with a goal.
Yeah, lovely. And his only goal was 61 appearances.
Well, that's because he probably played more as a defender than a midfielder at that point. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it was a touch and go. So
yeah, total football it was.
Well, maybe he was a wing back, and everyone was like, "Do we class him as a defender or a midfielder?" I've got no idea.
Yeah.
Like he's just in front of the defence, but just behind the midfield. So I've got no idea.
I love the fact that because he's played indoor football, his top right summary is so skewed with goals, like. defender midfield. He's got 29 goals for Cleveland Crunch. He's got in 92 appearances, 21 goals in 54 appearances for Minnesota Strikers. It's like, yeah, indoor football's help there. When he goes to outdoor football, he scored 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 goals.
I love the fact, can we refer to it as that all the time? When we've got someone that's playing indoor and outdoor football. Welcome to the 2022 Outdoor World Cup.
There were rumours of it having like air-conditioned stadiums all rude, so that would have been an indoor World Cup.
It wasn't rumoured. That was part of their bid to win the World Cup, and then they went, nah, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Looked at the cost. That's going to cost a foot. We've already got to build every single stadium that's here.
Exactly. So, but no, I'm glad we came to Mike Sweeney. It's interesting to know that Canada had to call up players that were playing indoor football to the 1986 World Cup. So,
yes, please.
Yeah.
But let's move us along and go to the Canada national soccer team. Now, I want you to. This will be updated with their current squad for the World Cup.
Yeah.
We need to get to
5.
Oh well, I can definitely do 5. I think.
Can we do 10 between us or the whole squad?
Let's go as far as we can. Right, go.
Right, Davies. Alfonso Davies.
Jonathan David.
Atiba Hutchinson. I should have left him for you because he's your man.
Okay, that was good. Junior Hoylett. Junior Hoylett.
He is still in it. Sile Larin. Striker.
Yeah, I think he's their top scorer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You said we can get to 5. That's 5. Like, we can get to 5. The goalkeeper. Who's a Canadian goalkeeper?
Exactly. That's where I was thinking. Because they normally... I can name previous ones. Lars Hirschfeld used to be a Canadian keeper. We've got Thomas Radzinski as a former player.
Yeah, they've also got a really Italian-sounding striker. Like, it's like Cavani. Cavalli? Are you looking
Cavallini
at it?
Cavallini.
Cavallini. He scored loads of goals during qualifying for him.
Yeah, so I'm looking now. So we've got Milan Borjan is Red Star Belgrade. He's their main man, 68 appearances. Who else would we know?
Oh, Richie Laraya, I recognise as a name from Toronto. Yeah, I recognise him.
Jonathan Osorio, I recognise. David Wotherspoon, plays for St Johnstone, Scotland. We have a Porto player, Stefan Estaquio. Junior Hoylett's now at Reading at the moment. A couple of forwards playing for Club Bruges. Didn't Jonathan David had a stint in Belgium, didn't he?
Yeah, that's where Lille signed him from, wasn't it?
Yeah, and yeah. Liam Fraser is in Belgium. Seems like a little well-trodden path there. Oh, it's funny they list Alfonso Davies as a forward in their side. Yeah. He's somewhat wasted at left-back.
He'll be playing centre mid for them, I imagine. In the World Cup. I think he'll be centre mid, yeah. So okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't even recognise 10 of them there now. I've got the names in front of me, so.
No, that was a what about their recent call ups? Is there anyone who's been missed? No, it's not missed.
Yeah, Daniel Henry, I know again from Football Manager in the MLS when I've had a couple of saves there.
Blackpool forward Charles Andreas Brim.
And
so that was the PS that's FC Eindhoven. This is
Theo Corbano is Blackpool.
Oh, I love the fact we've got two different pronunciations there.
Yeah.
Atiba Hutchinson will get his 100th cap at the World Cup if he plays two of the three group matches.
Which he will, yeah, you'd imagine.
Jonathan David may, has a chance of being top goal scorer in this World Cup if he outperforms Sile Larin.
Oh, I thought you meant like Golden Boot winner of the whole tournament.
No, he's 3 goals behind Sile Larin, and he will obviously surpass him. He's got 20 caps less, so it stands a very good chance of surpassing him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coaching history, Josh, we'd like to look at that. A couple of Brits in there before John Herdman as well. So, oh, 3 actually. Peter Dinsdale, which is a name that obviously resonates with me, given my wife's maiden name. Frank Pike was there, and Tony Waiters had 1, 2, 3 stints as a manager. Bob Bear Park is another one, another Englishman in there.
Great name. Cool. That's a great name.
It's a great name, isn't it? But yeah, what else have we got knocking around down here? So, and obviously, this will be Canada doing back-to-back World Cups as well, isn't it? Because they're hosting it. So they get
they will do
auto qualification.
That's great for that generation, isn't it?
Yeah, Lovely stuff. What's been their like highest ranking in FIFA? Can we find that out?
It currently is now. It's now.
Oh, okay. Oh, you said, was it 44 or something?
33rd.
33rd.
It was, yeah.
Nice.
I don't know Carl Larin.
You don't know him?
No, I've not seen him play or anything.
No.
Yeah, well, would have done now because I watched a Canada match at the World Cup, but at the time of recording, negative.
FM have him as a sort of quicker, I think he's quite tall, but a quicker striker rather than a target man sort of thing. So, or when I used him a couple of years ago. But,
well known as the Reds or Maple Leafs, yeah. Or the Rouge, because obviously there's a French-speaking element of Canada. And various home stadiums. What's that about? Let's have a look at that.
Well, they obviously move around the country.
Yeah, during the 2020 World Cup qualifying, Canada used BMO Field in Toronto, Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton. BMO Field is Canada's largest natural turf stadium, followed by Saputo Stadium in Montreal. And they played their 2018 World Cup qualifiers in Vancouver. All outdoor football.
What do you think about Canada? Chances? Group is obviously Belgium, Croatia and Morocco.
And Belgium are top performers, aren't they?
But
Morocco match should be hopefully
better than 86.
Their last match.
Are they going to get a point?
Yeah, they're scoring a goal. Surely.
They're scoring a goal. Yeah, okay, they're scoring a goal. Yeah.
It's a shame that the Morocco match is the last one out. It feels like that's going to be dead rubber. If you might have hope from a Morocco first up win it, you might have some hope going into the other matches. But you never know. If they snaffle a draw against one of the others and beat Morocco, you got a chance.
True, very true.
Ever remember an England v Canada match?
No, I don't. Not that I can spring to my mind. I don't think we've played them, have we? Since we've been sort of watching football, let's say.
Not that I can recall. No.
So interestingly, Josh, Canada lost to Qatar in a friendly 2-0. So are we all underestimating? I mean, Canada aren't a world powerhouse, but are we underestimating Qatar?
No, but they're not the worst of the worst. I think most people think they're going to be kind of bottom of the pile, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And that was this year, so it's annoying that it didn't say on Felix Sanchez's page, right? And ran out winners 2-0 over Canada. Just as a line.
So I've got them beating Canada here, Dave, in a friendly in the list.
Oh, yeah, so they did. They beat Qatar 2-0 in a friendly. It's even in green. It's even in green.
Yeah, I thought that's very helpful conditional formatting there to... Oh, do you know? Okay.
Yeah, no, I saw the 2-0 loss to Uruguay, which makes a bit more sense. So.
Yes, yeah. Uruguay, I think they're going to have a good tournament.
I don't think so. We haven't done predictions on pod. Too late now.
No.
Competition's
too late, yeah. This is, deep in. Yeah. We'll just be shown to be absolutely idiots or people who have, what's his name, the octopus?
Oh, Paul? Paul the octopus?
Paul the octopus? Yeah.
It was Paul, wasn't it?
You ever touched an octopus?
I have touched an octopus, yeah.
Pray tell.
What do you want to know?
Where did it touch you? Where did you touch it?
Well, he had to go
was
to prison
it,
after
consensual?
He touched me. So, yeah.
Yeah. Many hands make light work.
Yeah. No, it was just in an aquarium. Like, it probably shouldn't do things like that, but it was available at the time, so...
It was available.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't know better, let's say. I was younger. So.
And just general thoughts about octopuses? Octopi?
Octopi. Love them. So clever. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And
very
they're
clever.
Tasty.
Would you like one? Dave.
What? You ever
would you like
octopus?
One crawling up you? If you were snorkeling or scuba diving and one came up to you, would you be like, ugh?
Oh,
or like, ah.
If it was a big fucker... I'll be like, no, that's not like they've because they've got a beak, haven't they? Oh. Where their mouth is, it's actually like a beak, and it's really it can really hurt you.
I thought that was squids.
I've never seen a squid. I mean, they're tasty
as
well.
That's my follow-up question. Have you ever touched a squid?
No, yeah. I haven't touched a squid. No. So, well,
what animals have you touched?
Have I touched a squid? I don't think I've touched a squid.
Name me three other animals that not many people have touched that you've touched.
Dolphin, stingray, manta ray. That's three. There you go. All in the sea.
You're stingray, manta ray. I'm not having them as two
okay. So dolphin. I mean, elephant in the wild. Can I say an elephant?
Oh, have you touched an elephant?
I've touched an elephant. Yeah.
Well, you can say elephant. Why can't you say it?
Well, because you wouldn't let me have stingray or manta ray. I don't think many people have.
No. I meant it's two different ones.
Oh, yeah, elephant. I'll have elephant then, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I fed an elephant a banana at a sanctuary where they rescued them from, like, circuses and stuff. It was really nice to see them being rescued, but it was really sad to see their state of the elephants. But, yeah.
Yeah. So, did it want a banana?
It did. Yeah, it really liked the banana. Okay. Yeah. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Right, well, on that bombshell, let's go for it. John Herpin.
Yeah. Segway.
What if John Herpin likes bananas? Right, well, we started this episode with a World Cup, current World Cup manager special with Felix Sanchez, the Spanish manager of Qatar. He led Qatar to the 2019 Asia Cup, defeating Japan 3-1 in the final. The losing manager that day was Hajime Moriyasu. He played in the agony of Doha, the Japan's failure to qualify for the 1994 World Cup. In that group, there was Iran, whose only World Cup appearance was in the 1986 World Cup, which we knew was Canada's previous performance. So in that 1986 World Cup, one player of note, a Canadian player, got a red card among seven others, Mike Sweeney. Mike Sweeney has a great indoor and outdoor career and played for Canada 61 times. So we clicked on Canada's men's national team. And as we know, their current manager is John Herdman, Englishman John Herdman of Canada team, from Spanish Felix Sanchez of Qatar national team, all done and dusted, touching on a World Cup in between.
Yeah, lovely. And another manager, current World Cup manager as well, Japan's manager. So lovely stuff. But it does bring an end to this week's podcast. Thank you so much for listening to another of our World Cup specials. I hope you enjoyed it. Feel free to send in any suggestions you have for Wikipedia pages for us to start or finish, or a whole journey you would like us to do, or even a theme. We're always open to suggestions. You can find us on Twitter at WikiWanderers and on Instagram at WikipediaWanderers. But for now, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.